Welcome back to WGLZ 91.5. I'm Mike. You are listening to College Radio, and we are Passionately Vocal. On today's episode of Passionately Vocal, we have Faculty Focus with Dr. Jeffrey Grubbs, a professor here at West Liberty with a degree in art education. He is an author, printmaker, educator, and editor. Dr. Grubbs, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me.
Dr. Grubbs, how are you doing today? Sorry, that was on me.
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, for sure. So let's start from the beginning. Did you always plan on being a teacher for art? Is that something you always had a desire to do?
I think back in my undergraduate days at Heron School of Art in Indianapolis, my first year there, I wanted to be an animator, actually. And I've always gone to church, and so I actually, my leaders for that church, the Sunday school, they said, hey, I got to leave to go to a mission trip. Does anybody want to teach? And I said, I just felt like I wanted to try it. And I tried it, and I really enjoyed teaching in front of these students, and I switched my major in my sophomore year then, and I became art education from there.
That's interesting, because I feel like most people don't usually start with their career that they end up on, but it sounded like you always had art as your corner. So if it wasn't going to be teaching art education, you were going to go to art one way or
another. For sure. I was always art. I started drawing really young, and my dad was actually a draftsman, designing different presses and stuff like that, hard materials and machines, and illustrating him. And then he was asked, well, can you draw houses for commissions? And so we went to he started drawing a few different narrative scenes and nature scenes in black and white pen and ink. And I was right around, between 11 and 12 at that point, so I decided to draw my own like animals and stuff like that. So we went to a craft fair together, and we started selling our work. So I started selling artwork when I was 12, and from then on, I was always hooked on art.
Yeah, that's interesting. So your dad, he built presses, is that what you said he built?
He would draw them and design them through his company, and so these different machines. He was drawing. Right. He was a designer for machines, and they had to use the pen and ink for his own work. And so he would bring it home, and he would start drawing the same illustrating pens. And then he just kind of transitioned the material from machines to drawing art.
That's interesting. When I was researching, I got into a section that says you got into printmaking. Do you think maybe that's why you took up printmaking as a hobby?
Probably not. I mean, I do a lot of different materials. So my last few shows, I've been doing sculpture, painting. I've been doing a lot of work actually from doing, and I do printmaking. I love printmaking. But lately I've been pretty much all over the place. So the difference between some artists in the modernist tradition is that you choose a media and you work that media to be as best as you can. And in a postmodern direction, you're more interested in the conceptual framework or the topic issue that you want to address, and then you choose to address that conversation or issue, you choose the best media to address that conversation, to make that meaning come out. Right. And so I'm a postmodern artist. So when we had, for our faculty exhibition, we had nature as one of our themes. And so I went out and collected objects, rocks, these conchs that were on the trees. And actually, I cut some of those off and painted those, and scenes and things, and sculpted with the vines. So it just really kind of depends on what the topic is. I've done printmaking my first year in 2018, dealing with the eradication of rhinos as an animal. And I decided to address that by making this large map, or a large flag of Vietnam. And it had all the red part of the flag was with a dead rhino on it. And then in the center, their yellow star was a living rhino.
I saw that. I saw that piece. That was interesting. And when you you brought up the exhibition with nature, I actually saw that exhibition too. That's when I first saw, oh, you do more than teach. You, like, you actually do some of the art too. But that brings me on to my next question. With having such a large background in art, sculpture, photography, painting, all these other subjects, I guess you could say, you teach too, but you also teach a lot of subjects. Which one's your favorite and why?
Well, they're really different. So I compartmentalize my teaching in either I'm teaching art history, which is obviously for all students and the content of art history, and then I teach art education methods. So that's the teaching of the pedagogical aspect of teaching art education, the curriculum, the assessment, the ideas and content. How do you teach? How do I help my students teach others? And I have three of those classes, plus a graduate program doing that. I also teach the Art 140, which is art appreciation for non-majors. So there's a very different kind of angle there. I would say I've loved all those different areas at different times. More recently, the thing that's got me interested and growing for my own self, because you always have to be continuously growing and pushing your own self, is teaching a course on arts advocacy and policy and leadership at the graduate level. And so I'm trying to build the next arts leaders of the future. And so that particular course stretched me. I took an education law class when I got my fourth degree on educational principal leadership. And so by taking an educational law class, I got to incorporate that into some of this. And then also finance, so they had to learn some finance in this course. And then they had other pieces of this leadership course for arts administration. And then there's a fourth piece on basically grassroots development of communities. And so, but that class was challenging to me to grow and develop in areas. I had never taught that. I just finished teaching it in the fall. And so in the first half of the first 8 weeks. So I think I love all of them for different reasons, but I like being stretched and pushed to new things.
Right. And that class is an upper level, right?
That's a grad class.
Which drives me to my next question. You taught almost every level of education, but you find yourself teaching at a college level. What was your favorite, like, age or grade to teach?
You're right. I did teach from kindergarten all the way up to graduate level students. I think they all are fun. So I've taught elementary, middle school, and high school, and again, college and stuff. But there's something about sixth grade that they are innocent in a certain way, that they're very malleable, if you will. And then, but they're at a higher cognitive level where I could really go into some deeper content. Right. So I think that there's a certain balance between the elementary and middle component there.
That's interesting. But so you went out through these different schools, taught different ages, different grades. What drove you to teach at West Liberty in 2018?
Well, I've lived in seven states, I've done a lot of different things. I've taught K through 12. I've taught the college level. I've also been an administrator. I was as associate dean of a community college in Colorado, and there's a lot of challenges when it comes to administration. And you also, it's not as protected as a faculty, and so. Plus, I also was getting to a certain age. My family lives in Cincinnati. That's where I grew up. And so I was really interested in coming back and being closer to where my parents live. And so I learned about this opportunity job-wise, and it's like, I think I'm going to go for it. And so I did.
All right, for sure. Another thing that I was interested in, too, is, okay, so you told me that you came up here, but it sounded like you came up here more for, like, the demographic. Like, I can be closer to the people. But you also taught at different places. What do you like and dislike about West Liberty compared to previous experiences?
So the thing about West Liberty is it's a smaller institution.
Right.
Okay. So I've gone to, as a student, I've gone to Ohio State, University of Kentucky, Indiana University. These are huge schools. I wouldn't choose those type of schools today. And I obviously recruit on the fact that smaller schools give people more personal attention. So if I were to tell my own kids where to go, I'd say, don't choose a big mega school because you're not going to get attention. That's the one thing that I love about this institution. It's smaller. I am the advisor of my students. I know all of them by name. They know how to get a hold of me. They got my cell number. They can call me if they need anything. So that personal attention, you become a number when you're in these larger institutions. Right. I've worked at this is its history. West Liberty's history is a normal school. It started as an education school, okay? And I worked at a small Christian college in New York, a liberal arts Christian college. I then went to a larger in Arkansas, worked at a larger public school institution for about 11,000 students were there. It felt very, very different. Then I went to become a dean of a community college in Colorado. When that was only a 2-year school. Very, very different experience. They are very, very focused on student-centeredness there because you're only there 2 years. Right. You can't have them drop out. And there's usually the smaller demographics.
All right. Well, I really appreciate that. It's time for our scheduled break here on WGLZ. We'll be back in a minute with Dr. Jeffrey Grubbs, where we discuss a little further about his teaching and his life outside of education. We are WGLZ 91.5. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal.
WGLZ, the best college radio. Listen in for the top hits at your fingertips.
Rewind.
That's right. Everybody's on WGLZ.
West Liberty.
Everybody's doing it.
Welcome back to WGLZ 91.5. I'm Mike. We're back with Dr. Jeffrey Grubbs. We are college radio, and we are passionately vocal. For the second half of the interview, we're going to discuss a little bit more about your teaching style, but we're also going to get a little bit more into your personal life outside of school. So we got to know a little bit about what you do for the campus and the community, and we'll touch more upon that. But I also want to know a little bit more about who you are as a person. So I want to touch upon some of your hobbies and some of the activities that you do. I read that you were a printmaker, an author, an editor, and a lecturer. So it seems like education has always had some sort of value to you, even outside of your work. How would you say that that impacted you? Because you told me that you wanted to be in art, you wanted to be an animator. But it seems like even before then, education had some sort of value to you.
Well, I've always believed that if you want to change a society, you focus on the education, right? That is the institution that can transform cultures. And so I believe in that, and I think it's important. As a person, I want to bring and support that. I'm actually the president of the West Virginia Art Education Association. And so that's what I've been doing lately, is trying to strengthen art education at a state level. By using that administrative experience that I have and at the state aspect. And these are all, it's a nonprofit. These are all art teachers that are, they have full-time jobs as teachers. And we've worked to build up the advocacy for arts across the state. But I've always loved education and think education is a fundamental institution.
Right. Do you think that your time in education has expanded your personal artwork? So you taught art history, and you teach a bunch of different courses that force you to learn more about art. Do you think that's incorporated itself into your life?
Yeah, teaching all the three art history courses, I think, has significantly impacted my personal art because I'm always involved in it. I'm always reading about it and inspired by it. And so I do think it impacts what I do, and ultimately we're all, as artists, looking to art history and seeing what has been done. You don't just reinvent the wheel.
Right.
That's why it's there.
But another thing I found interesting about education with you specifically is a lot of people will get their degree, just teach, and then it is what it is, but you always seem to find a way to take it further. You're an author, but I looked into some of your works, and they're highly educational. They're not You know what I mean? Like, they really push that, the idea that education is important, and it furthers that message with art. Can you talk to me a little bit about how those messages impact you, and a little bit about why you began writing it?
Well, I think to have a larger influence on art education field, I think writing articles is an important step in that.
Right.
You know, obviously the other side of it is leading nonprofits and art, which I'm doing. So I'm doing it in two different ways. But when it comes to getting my ideas out, you know, publishing is important. So I'm on an editorial board. I've been on other journals. You know, I review journals. I'm in these different literatures, paying attention, and I'm trying to write ideas. One of the things that I strongly believe in, and I got it published in 2014, was the idea of helping teachers continuously reflect on their teaching. They need to reflect on their belief systems. And I think a lot of people today don't necessarily do that. They don't think about the correlation between their ideas and how they see themselves in their role as a teacher and their belief systems and how it translates to their curriculum design. They just kind of go in and teach. Not that these are necessarily all perfectly aligned, because there are a lot of different beliefs that we have. In my dissertation, that's what it was on. My dissertation had epistemological beliefs that the teacher looked at, teaching and learning beliefs, art content beliefs, and then their milieu, meaning, you know, your socioeconomic status, your geographical location, your ethnicity, your gender, all these type of things is your milieu. And all that stuff influences your beliefs and your thoughts. And how does that translate down to your teaching? How do you treat students?
Right. So you write, you edit things online. What I was interested into is, was that something you were always interested in? Were you always writing, or is that something that came from higher levels of education? Did you start writing after you kind of got an appreciation for what you were doing?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I was a good writer by any stretch when I was in high school, nor in undergrad even. I think that, frankly, when I was one of my advisors, my first advisor at Ohio State in my doctoral program, he said, Jeff, you're a terrible writer. And I said, and this was Dr. Terry Barrett, and I said, I know, sir, I'm trying to be better. I mean, people know when you're not a good writer. So that wasn't very long ago, you know. And I just think that when it comes down to it, one person needs to work hard to improve themselves. No one needs to be perfect at everything. That's impossible. And ultimately, you're just constantly improving yourself. So one needs to believe that they can achieve.
Right. And speaking of constantly improving yourself and thinking that you can achieve anything, what are you working on right now? Like, what are some things we can expect from you in the future?
Well, I've been presenting on a presentation on motivation theory for a while, probably about 5 or 6 years now. And that connected me down to creativity. I did a research study with 5 Ohio County teachers in 2019 on creativity. And so I've been trying to coalesce and put this together as a book on creativity. I think there's something special that I could present to that topic and that area that could fit for art educators or for anybody for that matter. So,
right. And you're always expanding your mind when it comes to education. I can see this when it comes to writing, comes to you actually doing the art, comes to you studying the art, and it comes down to you teaching the art. But what I also found to be pretty cool is that you go out of your way to participate in lectures and not just listen to them, but actually be vocal with them. What do these kind of events hold for you? Is it networking? Is it something you genuinely like to do? Is it like something that you see that's going to benefit you in the future? Is it like a career path? Why do you lecture? Like,
well, I think, again, I can't just sit in my office. That's not going to help anybody further the ideas that I do have. I want to be able to share them. I want to be able to collaborate with people. The key to success is collaboration in society. And so making network, and that goes for anybody, but whatever your ideas are, you want to network. And so going to these conferences, becoming a leader. You don't have to necessarily be president, you know, if you're not comfortable with that, but you become a member of an organization. Read the journals, send emails, you know, listen to blogs, participate in all kinds of ways of communicating. And so we're better together as a society when we're working together and talking together than we are in our isolation. And people are, you know, society, humans are social people. So I think also we need to be careful in the technology that, that internet is in our social media is causing is isolation or fragmentation. You know, we want to be able to listen to people across the aisle if you may think they disagree with you or whatever. I think it's wise to listen to everyone's point of view. That doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but I think free speech or free ideas is an important way to improve my thought. I might think something is true, but if I never give them a chance to give them, let them speak the idea, I might actually learn something from them.
Right. So one of the main reasons I'm getting that you want to write, lecture, pretty much do anything is you really want to get your ideas or your mentality out there. You're on live radio right now. What are some ideas that you're trying to spread through these lectures and writings?
Well, like I said before, I think that, you know, the teachers and anyone for that matter, self-reflecting about their belief systems. We have a lot of complex belief systems that go on. Most of them are subconscious. But I'd say it's really important for everyone to be thinking about what they believe and ultimately, you know, to reflect about them. And how can that translate to behavior? How can that translate to caring for other people and showing compassion and mercy and being open-minded and having discourse with other people? That's how you build societies from the ground up. And so we can't do it without having that discourse.
Right. A lot of your hobbies and your career, they kind of line on top of each other. They kind of cross over. You have an interest in art and in education, and that's really what you do. How do you keep yourself from burning out when your hobbies and your career kind of merge into each other?
Well, I never get burned out by making art. You can turn art into a job, you can, but that's not what I'm doing. When I make art, it's very therapeutic for me. I enjoy doing the artwork for our exhibitions and things like that. I have a homestead, so when I go home, you know, I work with the chickens, I work with our, we just got some turkeys, young ones, and we have rabbits and things like that. We grew a lot in our garden this year. And so putting my hands in the soil and getting things growing, I can see the production, canning them, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I think is very, it's been really healthy for me.
For sure. I mean, that's a personal hobby of mine, too. You can never do enough. Once everything's done, you got something you want to do better. So that's a good piece of advice. Last question I have for you is I've seen that you have a list of accomplishments inside and out of your career. Which one has meant the most to you, and is there any accomplishment that you're working towards right now?
Well, I think the I think being on, you know, the teaching and learning visual inquiry teaching and learning journal editorial board is an important piece. I've been doing that for I'd say 2012. It's been a while, but that's still very important to me, staying into that that area. But also I think moving into presidency of the West Virginia Art Education Association is an important piece, that building up leaders and dovetailing that with also the master's in art education, where you know, building people from the undergrad moving into the graduate, and now I'm going national with that program. It is a fully online program, so I have people. I just had a friend of mine who put flyers out at the at a conference in the state of Washington, so way on the Pacific Coast, that we're trying to recruit for this master's in visual art education program. And so recruitment is always an important piece, and going to conferences helps that recruitment as well. So
I mean, that's a lot to look forward to. Thank you, Dr. Grubbs, but time is running out, and I appreciate you coming on the show and telling WGLZ Radio a little bit more about you. This concludes our episode today on Passionately Vocal. You have been listening to Mike and Dr. Jeffrey Grubbs on WGLZ 91.5. We are College Radio, and we are Passionately Vocal.